Okay, it's 4 o'clock, so let's go ahead and get started. We got a quorum. So, first off, we got some new employees. So, Frank, why don't you come on up and introduce yourself and tell us about your job.
Good afternoon. I'm technically not a new employee, but I've been here about 5 years, but I am in a new role now. I've moved into the senior electrical engineer role back in beginning of February. So, like I said, I've been here about 5 years, and during that 5 years, I've had some good opportunities to be involved in some unique projects here. I was the project manager for the new Foothill substation on the west side of town over by Mahaffey Park, and also was the project manager for the Big Thompson Canyon overhead power line rebuild project. So, you know, during my short time here, I've had some unique opportunities and some really interesting projects to challenge and learn from. They did change the senior electrical engineer role a little bit. So I am managing the three other electrical engineers we have on staff now. But other than that, do you have any other questions? Colorado State.
And I've got to say that in the short time that he's been in the senior electrical engineer position, he has stepped up large. Very, very impressed. So we thank him for that, and he's going to continue to do great work for the department.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
William?
Distribution design superintendent.
Supervisor, yes. I'm William Ullum. I've also been with the city for a little while, 2 years. I started here in May of 2017 as one of our electric distribution designers. So I got a good opportunity to see how the city of Loveland does their primary infrastructure installations and our designs. In about March of 2018, I became one of our senior electrical distribution designers. Got to take a little bit of a larger role. I do provide some training to some of our designers and do some of our larger projects. And then, I guess last month, I took the new position as a electric distribution design supervisor. Sorry, the titles are a little bit interesting. So I've definitely been enjoying the challenge. We're currently a little bit short-staffed, but we're still getting our projects out. We interviewed a bunch of new people recently, so hopefully we'll be bringing on some new designers. Before I worked here, I lived in Honolulu, Hawaii, and I worked for a mechanical, electrical, plumbing engineering firm for 7 years as an electrical designer. So I did a lot of cool projects there. One that might be neat as far as utilities go, I did a 5-megawatt PV system design that was connected to directly to the utility system out there. So, you guys have any other questions about me?
Is it still on?
It is still running. Thankfully.
So I heard that electricity out there about 15 cents from a fossil fuel plant.
Well, I don't know directly how much the utility pays, but as a customer, it used to be around 36 cents a kilowatt.
36 cents, sorry.
And then recently, in this last year, it's down to 30 cents. So a bit more expensive than Loveland.
So we know why you moved to Colorado.
Yeah, I have family here and I love to snowboard, so it's a great opportunity. Great. Thank you, guys.
My name is Jarani Vasquez. I recently joined the team as a new electrical engineer. Just so you know a little bit about me, I have a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering with an emphasis in power systems. Back when I was living in Puerto Rico, I was doing sub-transmission design for the Puerto Rico Power Company. After I got my degree, I decided to move to Colorado and then start doing design work for Xcel Energy. My job mainly consisted in doing high-level electric distribution designs, feeder cable replacement, new subdivision developments, and in addition to that, I was doing all the quality control review for all design work in Grand Junction and for Collins Territory. I started here last Monday. The experience has been amazing so far. It's been great. I'm learning so much every single day just by being surrounded by this amazing co-workers. So I think that's it. If you have any questions.
When's payday?
Next Tuesday?
Good job.
Yes, I do.
Are you doing okay?
Yeah. I was actually back there when the hurricane happened, so I know how it was, but all my family is doing good over there, so that's good.
Good.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, we need to approve the minutes of March the 20th. Is there any additions, deletions, or alterations?
Yeah, just one item I wanted to bring up, and that is on item 6, which is on our page 4, I guess. It talks about the item being withdrawn to explore the policy implications, etc. Do we need to acknowledge that was withdrawn with the agreement of the requester, or was it withdrawn by the requester? I'm trying to recall how that came down. If it's important to qualify that process.
I think we could add with the agreement of the requester. Yeah. Could we add that in with the agreement of the requester for the formal minutes? We can do that.
Anything else?
I move approval of the March 20th, 2019 minutes.
Second.
For the Loveland Utilities Commission as amended.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Aye. Okay. Let's move on to citizens' report. Is there anyone that wants to share or contribute information at this time? Okay, Bruce.
I'm Bruce Croissant, fellow citizen activists like you all, I on the Transportation Advisory Board. I know what good work we all do, and I'm just here to watch and say thank you for all the work that you guys do.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming and keeping us on that straight and narrow.
I can't do that on the tab. I doubt I can do it here.
All right. Okay, we have three informational items. Are there any questions or comments on these items? Hearing none, let's move on to the regular agenda. Item number 4, the 2019 power cost of service rate study. And Mr. Jim Lees are going to give us a presentation and a recommendation.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. There are, as you probably have heard, we're doing a cost of service study for power this year. And so we're looking to get some direction from you today and also from City Council at a study session that will be coming up in May on a couple of key things that we'll be examining in the study this year. So that's what we're going to be taking a look at this afternoon. And we'll start off by looking at a little bit of the background on how these topics surfaced as ones that we wanted to get direction in advance on. The two items are our monthly base charge. And the question at hand is, should we go to trying to recover all of our fixed costs in our monthly base charge, which would be a departure from how we have been doing it for a number of years, or stay with the existing methodology, and then we'll look at the pros and cons of both methodologies. And then on our residential solar rate, we'll be looking at three scenarios, including the current rate designs, and then the pros and cons of those three scenarios. So, as far as background goes, at a study session last July 24th, Joe did a presentation at Council's request on the the residential solar rate design. And so there were three main things that came out of that study session as far as questions from the council. And one was the question about why we don't try to recover all of our fixed costs for power in our monthly base charge. A second question was, why do residential solar customers pay a higher monthly base charge than regular residential customers? And then a third one is, if we can purchase power from Platte River at 6 cents per kWh, why would we pay our residential solar customers 8 to 9.6 cents per kWh, depending on what season of the year it is, to purchase from them? And then as far as feedback that we've gotten from some of our residential solar customers, the primary thing has been criticism of that additional charge per kW of installed capacity of the solar unit. And so actually since 2017, from inquiries that we've gotten, meetings that we've had, we've been saying when we did our study in 2019, we would take another look at it. And so that's what we exactly were going to do. And then the direction that we received from you today, we'll be going back to City Council at the May 14th study session, and our rate consultant, Mark Beauchamp, will be leading the presentation that night on these two topics. So as far as the monthly base charge goes, I don't know how much people care as far as the nuts and bolts of this, but the way that the base charge is currently being calculated is what's called a minimum system requirement approach. And so it's a theoretical approach of, if we were trying to deliver 1 kW of electricity to every single customer, what would those costs look like? And it would be looking at things like sizing things to the smallest transformer, the shortest poles, the smallest conductor. So it's a theoretical look at our costs and saying, if we wanted to deliver 1 kW to everybody, what would those fixed costs look like? And using that methodology, it currently yields a base charge of $15.54 per month for a residential customer. And as an example, our utility billing costs, those are all completely recovered in the monthly base charge. But our distribution O&M costs, only 25% of those are recovered in the monthly base charge, because our system is obviously much bigger than 1 kW, so we have to upsize cable, we have to upsize transformers in order to meet that demand that's above 1 kW for each customer. So just 25% of our distribution O&M costs are recovered in the monthly base charge. And we could go to a methodology of recovering all of our fixed costs in a base charge. The base charge would go up to, according to our consultant, about $26 a month if we were to do that.
That's residential.
That's correct, Larry. Yes, thank you for that clarification. Yes, $26 a month for residential. So we'd go from that 15 up to 26. Pardon me, Larry?
Our capital expenditures.
Yes, they are included in that as well. So the pros and cons of recovering all of the fixed costs in the base charge, the pro would be greater revenue stability. So a lot bigger piece of our revenue pie would be coming from that base charge, which is a very dependable revenue stream, more so than KW and KWH are. That would be the upside. The downsides would be, it would have an adverse impact on customers with low usage. So if you're going from $15 to $26 per month and you only use 200 kWh, you're in all likelihood going to wind up with a higher bill than you would. A second con would be, our kWh charge would go down, and so that would be less of an incentive for people to conserve. And then there was a survey that was done, it's actually done every 6 months, by the Colorado Association of Municipal Utilities, and that survey showed that the average residential monthly base charge was $19, and so at $26 we would be well above that average. And as far as the minimum system requirement methodology that we have been using, the pros and kind of the flip side of the cons for the other scenario, which is that it would be a better outcome for low usage customers. It does a better job of promoting conservation, and it's very much an industry standard methodology. Our consultant, who has over 300 clients, it's used widely for their clientele, and it's used all over the country. The cons would be, again, less revenue stability versus collecting all those fixed costs in the base charge. And so our recommendation would be to stick to that minimum system requirement methodology. Oh, yes, John.
Why wouldn't you go with a tiered methodology on that based on usage?
A tiered methodology for...
Just like we do on water use, like some people do with water usage. What would be the pros and cons of doing a tiered usage charge?
Well, we do have seasonal rates right now for the summer months. You're saying if your usage is 0 to 500, you pay so much per kWh.
Yep.
That's something that we could look into doing. We've not utilized that to this point. And our average usage per customer has been very much in line with other cities. So, but I mean, that is something that could be looked at.
I think by doing something tiered like that, you would aid the people that were on the low end of the money bracket around here, not so well off. And anybody that wanted to use more energy, they would pay a higher price for the energy they use.
Right.
It would also take into effect any solar users, the self-generating users that are using a minimum amount, that would minimize their cost back on the system as well.
True. Could do that. Yep.
Hey, maybe support something to look into.
Okay.
Is distribution O&M considered fixed cost or variable cost?
I'd say it's largely fixed.
Largely fixed. And I assume admin and build is fixed.
Say that again?
Administrative cost and build.
Those are actually split. There's some of those that are recovered in the base charge and some of those that are recovered in the kWh charge.
What's you use an example here of 1 kW.
Mm-hmm.
What's the average use for a customer in Loveland? Or maybe the median use?
Is Frank still here? For residential,
yes,
Frank,
for residential,
you think?
I think it's about 900
kWh. Oh, so why don't you base it on that?
For monthly,
yeah,
I'd say for monthly residential usage, the average is about 670 kWh per month. What I was wondering, Frank, is like as far as demand goes, would that be like 8 to 10 maybe would be peak demand for a residential? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably somewhere in that range. We use anywhere from 5 to 10 kW,
kind of
as a general
rule of thumb
for
as far as an assumption for a residential customer.
Sorry,
as far as an assumption for a residential customer, 5 to 10 kW as far as peak demand.
So the question I, why wouldn't you base it on what either the median is or the average? Oh, that's so much better.
It was a theoretical calculation of 1 kW, not
yes,
in practice, just theoretical.
But what? Let's get closer to reality, I guess, is what I'm saying. Why don't we base it on what's real instead of just a theoretical?
That's too bad that didn't last.
The other question I have, because I'm a visual person in many regards, could you come back with an example, because I'm having a hard time seeing where customers are going to experience a higher cost. So.
Okay.
On the second scenario.
You mean if,
well,
like low usage customers?
Yeah. Compare the two scenarios. As it is now, right now, for an average customer, what it would be for an average customer or a median customer? Pick. And I guess the other thing is, what can we do to address specifically the concerns of those that have solar or wind? I guess maybe everybody's solar, not wind. But
that's the second part.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. Getting ahead of you. Oh, sorry. So shut up.
And so you're also asking, Councillor, why the 1 kW assumption is used, the minimum system requirement? Because that's really something Mark Beauchamp would be better equipped to answer.
Well, I mean, if you feel that's appropriate, but it seems to me, why don't we use what is reality versus a theoretical rate? Theoretical oftentimes is not so.
Okay.
It's not, should I say, accurate, or kind of runs against reality sometimes and doesn't stand up.
To be clear, though, the MSR is an industry standard?
Yes.
Okay.
It is.
Using the 1 kW?
Yes.
Okay.
So I don't know that that helps me, but you want to tell me what that
so,
means?
So my thought is, I'm not part of the industry, so I can't explain why, but if the whole industry is using it, there's probably some sound reasoning behind it. So I'd like to hear that reasoning. If 90% of all utilities are doing that, there's probably a reason, or whatever the standard is based upon, right?
Okay. I think it, and again, I'll let Mark speak to it, but I think it's that essentially we're saying, okay, if you're hooked up to our system, What is that cost to be hooked up to our system? I think that's kind of the thinking behind it. But I can let Mark speak more to that on May 14th.
And I would also be interested to know in what both the average and the median utility bill is for customers.
Okay.
In other words, how many people might really experience an increased cost?
If we were to go to collecting all of the fixed costs in the base charge?
Yes. And what's the impact, I guess?
There's no question if you do that people that do not consume much are going to have a big increase, and the people that consume a lot will see it's probably a small increase.
Well, and I'd like to know how big that is.
Is that
a few or a lot?
Compared to a 2,000-square-foot house to a 6,000-square-foot house with the same base charge is, to me, illogical.
Well, it's not to me.
That doesn't strike me. I disagree.
Fixed cost or fixed cost?
Yeah, but is the fixed cost because of the 6,000-square-foot house or because of the 2,000-square-foot house? It depends what you base the fixed cost on.
If you're talking about energy generation, to me it doesn't make any difference. It's not the recipient, it's the provider that fixes
cost. It probably depends what you're using as a divisor.
If everybody, I think what he's saying is if everybody was capped at, let's say, 500 kW, and you had 10% that used three times that amount, the system would have to grow. The system as a whole would have to grow to accommodate that growth. And so now the fixed cost for everybody has to go up to accommodate that growth. And so that's why part of it is built in with a usage charge. So part of the fixed costs are recouped through the usage charge, and part of it's fixed through the customer charge.
That's why I wanted to have a conversation. Quick question. I don't want to take up the time.
I'm sure you have the information, but can you do a comparison with other Platte River Power cities as to the cost of the city of Loveland for similar kinds of users?
The other four owner cities?
Sure. That's actually what that CAMU survey does. It compares. And there's 46 or something utilities statewide, and it compares a typical residential bill, a typical small commercial bill. So, yep, we can certainly provide that.
I can tell you what Longmont is in 2018. It was $12.40
for the base charge. Yes.
Is services of the departments considered variable cost or fixed cost?
Services rendered by other departments to water and power?
Yeah.
That one also is partly recouped in KWH, partly in the base charge. One other thing I was going to mention about the base charge is it would go up dramatically if we were to go to this all fixed cost recouped in the monthly base charge. It would go up dramatically for our commercial customers. So as an example, and again, this is an estimate, for a large general service customer, large commercial customer, the base charge would go from $146, which is what it is now, to about $800 a month.
Wow.
So, and the demand charge would go way down, the KWH charge would go way down. So, you know, if you're a big user, probably would really like that. But that's an example of how much it would swing if all of those fixed costs were recovered in the base charge.
And I agree with the comment somewhere that you put on there that if for the fixed base charge, you're discouraging energy conservation.
Yes, I think that would be an outcome.
I would echo that. I think one of our goals should be to encourage energy conservation.
Right.
I do have one more question before we move on. When did the self-generating class become a reality? Like, and what were the reasons for it? Why did we create a separate class for the self-generating customers instead of considering them normal residential? And how old is that class?
I'm not exactly sure, but I want to say 2009 or 10,
okay.
I believe.
Okay.
I have a head nod from somebody who knows a lot about self-generating. So.
Is there an industrial or business equivalent to self-generating class?
Yes, we do have one for commercial customers as well.
Okay.
I have a couple. In the 10-year CIP plan, are we going to put smart meters in? Do we have a goal or not?
Joe, do you want to take
I'll
that
take
one?
That one. Right now, we are looking ahead with the 2020 budget and looking ahead. Right now, in this current 10-year CIP, we do not have any plans for AMI. It is extraordinarily expensive. I would love to put AMI in tomorrow for both water and power, but it is extraordinarily expensive. It is very hard to justify strictly on a payback, return on investment situation. What I would like to do is start investigating some potential grants from the state. There are grants available for advanced metering infrastructures, is the term AMI, for both water and power, and I'd like to start investigating those, but we will start trying to tuck away some money probably in years 5, 6, and 7 so that we could gradually implement these in both the water and power side. But I don't see, given the other demands on the system, on both the water and the power system, I would not see any expenditures and incremental expenditures until probably the 2025, 2024 range, somewhere in there. They're very, very useful. They are very useful to the customer in terms of seeing what their energy is and managing it is, managing water, understanding leaks. It also provides a great deal of information to our side, engineering, in terms of sizing transformers, understanding pipe sizes and pumping conditions within a water system.
Disconnects, reconnects.
Disconnects and reconnects. That's a huge, huge benefit of them. But from a straight ROI, it's very hard to justify it. But again, I think I am very, very much in favor of both of them. But that's where we are right now.
A little perspective, and some of you may remember this. When Fort Collins went to their AMI system, they got a grant to pay for half of it, so which was $18 million out of 36, and it wound up costing them 50 in total to fully implement it.
Is that for both water and power, or just power?
I believe that one's water also. But that's just, I mean, I'm sure it would not cost us $50 million, but on some scale, and I think things probably have gotten less expensive since they did their implementation, but that's, it still would be a large outlay.
So Black River charges us just per KWH delivered to the, what transfers into our system, correct? There's no base charges or anything like that?
There currently isn't. They are looking to to do a very significant overhaul to how they bill all four of the cities starting next year. And but right now we're billed on KWH and then on our contribution to Platte River's peak at whatever time of the month that happens. It's called a coincident peak.
Do we know or do we ever have a figure what it costs us to per KWH to from when we pick up their power to transmit it in on the average to the residential homes?
What kind of like what it costs us in terms of losses from trans?
No, like what's how many cents per KWH it costs us to transmit through our system on the average to a residential home?
That's something that does come out of our rate studies as far as like, so essentially the cost of distributing the energy, is that what you're asking, Larry?
Yeah, for KWH.
That is a figure that typically comes out of our rate studies because it's one of the components that goes into the rates. So
can we make that available to us when we get that?
I will make a note of that.
I also have a comment about the 2016 study. So I pulled my notes from the 2016 study, and one of the things I noted, if I was understood what I was writing, the cost of service study then showed small general, large general, and primary classes were about 30% of our cost of service.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. I haven't looked at that recently.
But anyway, the small general, it was decided, I'm not disagreeing with what was decided because I was one of the ones that sat there, but we didn't close the gap the way I showed, not even close to it over the 3-year period. So it still kind of bothered me a little bit as we progress along and then we talk about the class of self-gen customers that we supposedly closed this gap that was discovered
over a two-year period.
And it looks to me like we really didn't do much at all to, I'm not sure about all three, but at least my notes showed on the small general.
Well, I know the small general service had the highest rate increase of any of the classes that were.
Yeah, it was a 30% difference. Yeah, I saw the rate increase, but
That's part of the philosophy of rate design, and I'm sure we'll come to you all again this year. We've used that approach of taking the average increase that's needed overall and saying no class will have more than 2% above that or 2% below that. That's, you know, we don't have to do that. You could tell us take everybody to cost of service the next year. That's another option. But then that would be some of our classes might get a, you know, double-digit or, you know, high double-digit increase.
That's exactly what my notes were saying. It's really difficult to close a gap if it's 30%, 2% a year.
True. Okay, yeah, okay.
Can you switch me to small general? No, I'm just tongue in cheek.
Okay. Okay, so anything else? All right, moving on to the residential solar rate design.
The way I read this, they're asking for two recommendations. Are we going to cover both first or do one at a time?
What do you want, Jim? Do you want us to make a recommendation?
I was thinking of getting through the presentation and then just getting the recommendation at the end, but whatever the pleasure is of the group.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So as far as the residential solar rate design, our current rate design is, this is based on 2018 numbers, the rates. $14.80 is the monthly base charge, which is the same base charge for a regular residential customer. And then the additional charge for capacity of installed solar unit, $2.47 per kW. And then the rate for energy consumed is the same as a residential customer, basically 8 cents to 9.6 cents per kWh, depending, again, whether it's the summer or non-summer part of the year. And then the buyback rate is exactly that same retail rate. As of the end of 2018, we had 124 residential solar customers. And based on the fact that the rates in 2018 were then cost of service, what we collected from those 124 customers was a net of $57,000 of revenue. So the two alternatives that we wanted to look at today, and again get your recommendation on, both of them would have to generate $57,000 of revenue. It'd just be a different way of collecting it versus the first option, because that was the cost of serving the solar customers, and so that's what we would need to get back from whichever option that is preferred. So in the second option, it would be completely getting rid of that $2.47 per kW of installed capacity charge. That would become zero. And then the trade-off would be a much lower buyback rate of 4.75 cents on average per kWh instead of 8 cents or 9.6 cents per kWh.
Jim, just to be clear, the base rate would then be exactly the same for the solar self-gen as for the residential customers under that option.
That is correct. Okay. Yep. And then the third option, again, we need to generate $57,000 of revenue. And with this one, it would be setting the buyback rate at the same cost that we purchase power from Platte River. So as Joe has said before, it doesn't matter what color the electrons are, whether they're coming from an excess generator or from Platte River, it would be 6.2 cents per kWh. And then with that one, then by doing the math, it would be necessary to have a 96 cent per kW additional capacity charge for the installed solar unit. Yes, Council?
When you come to Council, you're going to have to explain why you feel it costs more to provide electricity to people that have the ability to self-generate than it does to me. Because that's a real point of confusion among Council.
We charge any electricity that's consumed through the meter is charged at exactly the same rate.
Well, that's not what that previous slide
says.
The
base charge. So why?
The base charge is different. I'm talking about the energy charge per kilowatt hour.
I think he was asking
it's
about
the exactly
base charge.
The same.
Go back a slide. So it says right there that there's two charges. There's a 7 cent and a 9 cent.
That's summer and winter. The summer charge is the higher.
Well, okay, the base rate is 1480, then you got a $2.47 per kilowatt charge.
Which increases the base charge.
Well, but...
And that's
because it's fixed. Their system is designed to do 8 kW only.
Or 5 kW,
right,
or
exactly.
Whatever it is.
But they have a different rate than I have.
No, sir.
A different base charge.
They have a different base charge.
Well, to me, that's a rate. I mean, that's what I'm paying. Call it whatever you want. When I get my bill, I get a different charge than they get.
Bundled together, yes.
I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Well, that's the two options that he's offering, then, is to say on the second one, option two is to go to exactly the same base rate.
Yes.
Okay, and so if... But then if you go to the same base rate, you said that you have to generate $57,000 more.
No, not more. It's just that in all three, we generated $57,000 of revenue from the solar residential customers in 2018, and their rates were at cost of service. So that in other words, what it cost us to serve them was $57,000. That's what we needed to collect from them. That's what we do for all of our different rate classes in a cost of service study. Is we figure out how much do we need to collect from our small general service customers, how much do we need to collect from our coincident peak customers, and then set the rates accordingly. So
okay, maybe I'm the dimmest bulb in the council, but you'll have to explain that because I don't understand what you're saying. Or we can talk later.
Whatever. Sure.
Well, and Mark will be going over that again at the study session as well, because I did get the sense, and that's really why we're bringing this counselor, is because we want council to understand and then to give us direction on the front end of the study of how to design the rate.
Should we understand? Because I don't understand. I have the same question.
Can I make a I found an email you sent me 2 years ago today, which I didn't, 2 years ago I didn't understand, and I think I finally understood it.
Okay.
But the fixed cost issue, I have no issue that we got to cover our fixed cost. I might disagree with Mark on the category. But way the correct me if I'm wrong, but the way the present rate's set with the self-gens, when they generate back into us, they're getting full credit. So that ends up meaning part of the fixed cost is buried in the kilowatt hour charge all of us are charged.
Well, see,
they're getting it reduced by that, and that's where...
That was where council has an issue. Fixed costs are embedded in the variable rate, and that's part
of it. And that's an MSR methodology.
Well, I think there may be some... I think when you're thinking in terms of production, which is the arena that you came from, we tend to think, as a supplier, you think in terms of fixed cost, variable costs. When we're thinking in terms of rate design, I don't think that it's not the same thing. The base charge is not necessarily the fixed charge. You just saw in the previous example that if we embedded all of the fixed charges in the base, how high that would be. So it's a matter of a base rate of what it costs to get that service to you, and then what does it cost to deliver the energy in terms of kilowatt hours to you. And so, yes, some fixed costs and variable costs are embedded in the energy rate.
Yeah, I understand that. That's the MSR philosophy, because you got to decide how you're going to treat a range of customers in the class. And I wish you're there. I think that is confusing. And what that other option where... first of all, let me go back. I still don't understand why Mark had price per KVA or whatever on the output. Because to me, when a self-gen goes in, if they got a bigger unit, they're going to put more out. But if you're coming back into you, they're not going to use any more on a per hourly basis, I don't think. But to me, to make it more simple, it looks to me like we ought to go back to the same base rate and reduce the buyback rate to the same buyback as Platte River Power, because I don't understand why we're paying them, why we're taking a self-gen, who is, you know, in that case, I look upon their competitor with Platte River Power. Why are we paying more to one person?
Well, and that sentiment was expressed by council. Yes. Although what you're describing, Larry, we wouldn't be able to do, because that wouldn't bring in enough revenue. If we give a buyback rate, we would have to go with a buyback rate of 4.75 cents per kilowatt on average. Well, that's exactly why we're having this conversation. Yeah. We want to get input from all of you. So
yeah, I think that when the cost of service studies, you want to make absolutely sure the cost that Mark is using for a variable and fixed, you agree with that.
We do review those.
Mean, you're comfortable in the past year that he's classifying the way we would do it if we were doing the rate study.
Yes, and again, he's using that methodology, which is an industry standard methodology. So.
And there's a rationale for that, including legal liabilities.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That does play into it also. I don't know if this is, Councilor, if this is a kind of a boiled down, but I mentioned earlier that an average residential customer uses 670 kWh per month. So, and we talked about these fixed costs so $26 a month to be connected to our system. So that's something that we need to collect from all of our residential customers. And we do that with the combination of that $14 per month charge and then a portion of the kWh charge. So if we have customers that we can charge and use 670 kWh per month, then we're made fully whole. With solar customers, it might be 300 kWh per month instead of 670. So we have a lower number of units that we can bill the customer for. And so the fix for that was to increase that $2.47 per kW. It was that was the way that was designed to try to generate the revenue, because the rate study showed that we were under collecting from the solar customers. So if you have in one scenario $14 a month plus 670 kWh, and in another scenario, you have $14 a month and 300 kWh. The 14 and the 300 kWh are not going to get us to the amount that we would need to collect from them. That's.
You and I need to sit down with the study council and show me. Because it's not going to, but to go to what Joe said, and maybe this is part of the problem. Somewhere with council or whatever, the discussion, the terminology became fixed and variable cost. And what you're saying is really different than that. It's a distribution charge versus the
hookup charge. Essentially, what it costs to hook
so
up
maybe
to the system.
Part of the problem is terminology too.
Could be.
And so you, I mean, you can debate what's fixed cost and so forth, but hopefully you would have a pretty good handle on what the hookup charge is.
We do.
Yeah. So maybe that's part of the problem is the terminology. Just throw that out.
Right. Okay.
But I still
have you ever made a bell curve of our residential customers to see how we really lie around that 672 per month?
I have not done that recently.
That would be a good one.
Yeah, that would be a good bell curve, but I think that would probably surprise us.
I think you're correct. That's an excellent thought.
Just to give a comparison, because it looks like there's an October 2018 article in the Longmont paper about low electric rates keeping solar panels off Longmont roofs. But, and I'm assuming Longmont uses MSR, because their fixed monthly fee, they call it a fixed, well, at least they did in the paper, fixed monthly fee is $12.40.
Yes.
Compared to our $14.80 something. And then, and
Fort Collins?
$21.60 is the longer the self gen base fee.
How much?
$21.60.
For a base rate, for a monthly charge?
Yes.
For solar, yeah, for self gen. So if we felt the right wing was upset over here. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean.
Yeah. I think another factor to understand is, and this is something I've tried to through the years, every utility, whether you talk about a water utility or a power utility, every utility is unique. And while they may buy the same electricity from a wholesale provider, in our case PRPA, what they have to do within their system in terms of repairs, renovations, replacements, whether they're running, they've committed to run everything underground at a higher cost than running overhead. Every utility is absolutely unique. Their revenue requirements are unique. It's interesting to look at comparisons across the Front Range and across municipal utilities and see where you fall on the spread. But I think the important thing to remember is that each utility is unique with a unique set of revenue requirements to meet costs.
So when we say that, do you realize we're also saying that we probably shouldn't be comparing ourselves and patting ourselves on the back when we say we're in the top 10 all the time?
But everybody does that. Everybody does it when you, no matter what you're talking about, everybody does it.
I understand that, but it's contradictory. American Water Works says you can't compare between utilities on yield loss either. But we always like to brag about if we happen to have a low water price.
I worked for the American Water Works Association for 2 years. I'm very familiar with their philosophies. But no, it's just, they do. Everybody compares. You compare everything. But everybody has to keep in mind that everything is unique. Their history, their background, and where they're going.
3-hour study session?
Yeah, it's going to be a long one, I'll tell you.
As I said, that's why we're wanting to come on the front end of things. And
well, I appreciate
the direction there.
I think if you and I can have a discussion, maybe some of the questions that council had, we can discuss and help you develop a clarity of presentation to answer those.
Okay. Okay, so let's see, where were we? Looking at these two other options again, the second option would be completely doing away with that $2.47 per kW of installed capacity, but then the buyback rate would go from 8 cents to 9.6 cents down to an average of 4.75 cents per kWh.
Then their charge would be what?
Their charge would be the same as a residential customer for energy that they consume.
Which would be what? You're using 2018 and we got on here in 2019, so what would be the?
1554.
That is the current monthly base charge, yes.
Did VAR generate this or did we generate this with not current data?
These numbers?
Yeah.
Mr. Beckstrom.
Okay.
Was so the one who did the analysis of the three scenarios.
Mark would run.
But I did run this by Mark also.
Yeah.
And yes, I put that. I'm glad you brought that up, Larry. That we don't want people to get fixated on these numbers, really, because I mean we're going to be doing a whole new study. But it's really an approach. It's how you want the rate designed is what we're looking for today, and what we'll be looking for from council on May 14. So then the third option would be setting the buyback rate at 6.2 cents per kWh. So again, what we buy from Platte River would cost the same as what we buy from excess generators. And if we go to that, then there would still be an additional monthly kW charge of capacity of 96 cents instead of $2.47. That's just the way that the math works out. It would be about a 60% reduction in that month or that monthly kW charge.
Jim?
Whoops.
Jim?
Yes.
When we go back and we talk, when we go back and we talk about monthly charges per kW of capacity of solar units, are we talking about design capacity of those solar units? Or are we talking about the actual efficiency of those units?
The installed.
Installed capacity.
So if somebody
buys a 4 kW unit, then that's what's used.
Even though it's only 20% efficient or 30% efficient?
Are you talking about capacity factor, John?
Yes.
Yeah, no, we don't take that into account. The capacity factor, the average capacity factor for solar at this latitude is about 35%. Mm-hmm. But that's a matter of the measure of the theoretical, what it can put out versus what it actually puts out. And that's a matter of what the self-generator has to figure out for themselves. We don't take into account the capacity factor. It's just the installed capacity of the solar panels at some rated kilowatt.
Okay.
Yep.
Roger, is this some of the most compelling discussion that you've heard all year?
Fascinating. Sounds like we're fighting over $5 a month to me.
So this next chart just kind of summarizes the three options. So with the current rates, all three of them have the same monthly base charge, and again, this is based on 2018 numbers. The current rate has the $2.47 per kW of installed capacity. Option two would have nothing. Option three would go down to 96 cents instead of 247. And then the rate for energy consumed would be the same for all three options. And then obviously on the bottom, that's where a big difference lies, as well as the additional charge per kW. With the current one, it's full retail for excess generation. In the second one, worked out to be on average 4.75 cents per kWh. And then in the option three, 6.2 cents per kWh. As far as
Jim, sorry, before you go, can you jump back to that? So, to put it in terms that I understand, option two is there's not going to be an additional charge for having solar, but you're not going to be paid back the wholesale rate.
Correct.
And whereas at option three, you'll get paid back the wholesale rate, but because of the costs associated with that, it needs to be recollected as a, quote, additional charge.
Yes. All three of them have to generate $57,000 of net revenue, and so that's what it takes to do that based on 2018 usage.
And is there a thought or idea around whether the 2018 usage of $57,000 would increase, decrease in 2019, 2020, 2021? Does that have to be revisited every year and it's only a year look back? And is the trend going up or down? On a per unit basis.
When you say the trend, Sean, are you like do we have more excess generators, or do we have more net, or like size of units? I'm not sure what, when you say the trend, which way the trend is going.
And maybe I don't understand the need for the 57. What is the 57, the additional 57,000 necessary to do?
Okay, and it's not an additional 57,000. It's so we have our residential, our regular residential class. We have a residential solar class. We have a commercial solar class. We have small commercial, large commercial. So we've got eight or nine different customer classes. When we do a cost of service study, it will look at how much revenue do we need to collect in total, and then of that revenue, based on the cost of serving each one of the classes, how much does residential need to pay of that? How much does residential solar need to pay of that? How much does large commercial need to pay of that? So in what came out of the study from 2016 was that, and again, that was based on the usage that we had at that time to design the rates off of, but the cost of serving the solar class, residential class for 2018 was $57,000. So the rates were designed to collect that amount from that class.
Thank you. So is there an expectation with technology or efficiencies or the way that the project, the program is managed, that the cost of serving solar will decrease on a per unit basis in the future, or will it increase?
I probably have to defer to Mark, unless I'm Frank. I don't know if you have a thought on that. I think what I'm hearing is that it's certainly gone down over time, and whether that's expected to continue, I don't know. Joe, I don't know if you.
I think, Sean, what you're asking is that total bulk of dollars that it costs to serve that customer class, is that going to go up or down? And the suspicions are because our costs are going to go up in terms of labor, insurance, cost of materials, by definition, irrespective of the efficiency of the solar panels themselves, it is likely that our costs will increase due to inflation and all that.
That would be my gut as well.
So when Jim is correct, these are examples of an approach. Next year, that 57,000 might be 64,
right,
or something like that.
And so just on a conceptual basis, going forward, looking at a 2020 rate or 2021, if option three, for example, were chosen and the bottom line of the rate for excess energy generated were the same, that 0.96 would increase because costs are increasing.
Or
to serve that class.
The monthly base charge would go up, as it would for the residential
class.
You're going
to see the monthly charge would go up as well.
All of it.
Both or just the base?
I would suspect that everything would go up.
Okay.
Again, I don't know what the numbers
sure,
are,
yeah,
but
we're
it's likely that that would be the case. But that's the approach is what we're trying to look at.
That helps me understand.
I went back and put 4 years of costs in for everything, and capital expenditures really influence that, which you're saying we've got to recover to have money left in the bank.
Yes.
So the total load that I got per 100 kilowatt hours in 2015 was roughly $77, and in 2018 it was $97. And a lot of that's influenced. If you took capital expenditures, I was 69 up to 81, so capital expenditures. We've spent a lot of money, which we had to do over a time period, but that's really correct. This is not getting cheaper to provide good electric service.
Gene?
You know, the one question that arises in my mind is it advantageous economically to install solar? Has anybody done a study based on the rates and things like that of the economics of installing solar?
Probably the solar.
Yeah. Well, Gene, I think that's every individual's, you know, decision on themselves, whether they're going to look at other benefits of solar from a macro standpoint, or they're going to look strictly on an economic standpoint from themselves. In California, they're paying better than 20 cents a kilowatt hour out there. I suspect that it's a lot more cost advantageous there.
Yep.
You go to Hawaii at 30 plus cents a kilowatt hour there, those are extraordinarily reasonable. I was not paying those rates when I was in Texas. I was paying more than that in Texas. So these are, you know, you're cursed with low rates.
Yeah.
You're